Well, what if the greatest threat to the Great Commission wasn't a lack of personnel or funding? What if it was actually something more insidious? The fact that the men in our churches in particular have become too soft. That's what we'll discuss with our guest today. Don't go anywhere. Welcome to The Missions Show. Welcome to The Missions Show, where we explore your hard questions on missions, theology, and practice to help goers think and thinkers go. I'm Alex Kochman, your host, joined by Scott W. Dunford, pastor of Western Hills Church in San Mateo, California, for another wandering stroll through the forest glens of missiology. That's what we'll go with today. We're glad that you're here with us. And if it's your first time joining us, especially via a podcast app, if you are listening to us on podcast, make sure that you leave us a positive rating and review and help other people discover this content. And if you're on YouTube, smash the subscribe button. Yes, everybody says to do it, but we appreciate that anyway. That'll connect you with ABWE, where you can get more content and know what God is doing among the nations. And the good news is, Scott, that despite all the bad news in the world, the Lord is successfully drawing his people to himself from among all the nations. And I take great joy and hope in that. Especially because there's a lot of discouragement happening around the world today. And our conversation today with my friend, I think will exhort us, challenge us, and maybe discourage us for a brief moment until it builds us up and reinvigorates us for the work of ministry. Right, Scott?
Yeah, I think so. We're excited to welcome together back for the second time on our show. Although the first time I wasn't on the show, actually, you just did it yourself, Alex. But Chase Davis, lead pastor of the Well Church in Boulder, Colorado, author of Trinitarian Formation and his new book out, Offensive Christianity. And he's also the host of the Foolproof Theology podcast. A church planter, former missionary, and we're glad to have you back on the show, Chase. In your book, you're making this argument that the crisis of men is not a primary of psychological, but it's more theological. And so many things dealing with men go after all the cultural stuff. And personally, I think it leads to a lot of cosplaying of guys like me, you know, using my Milwaukee mug when reality is the only Milwaukee tool I've used recently is my leaf blower. But when we get into this idea of manliness and true biblical masculinity, why do you start with this idea of theology and the fear of the Lord?
Yeah, I think a lot of our modern ills, particularly around sex, boil down to a misunderstanding of theological anthropology that's uniquely arisen in the modern era. So I grew up as a child in the 80s, 90s, 2000s in the church, was raised around the influence of things like Promise Keepers, of books like Wild at Heart, of these things. And it's funny you mentioned the cosplay and what some people call the LARPing. I actually don't discourage men from doing this. I think it's totally fine to engage. And, you know, if you like hunting, go hunt. If you like doing these things, these manly activities. But what you're hinting at is actually really important. A lot of it back when I was growing up, and I still think it persists today, a lot of the men's ministry approaches to men's discipleship, engaging men, ends up feeling trivial. It feels like it's just a marketing gimmick to get guys there. You know, you're going to have the axe throwing, the barbecue, depending on the church you're at, there may be some kind of liquid involved that may not be appropriate at other churches. And so you're going to get the guys there. But typically what happens is it becomes very therapeutic and psychological when you're hearing the talks. And really what the aim seems to be for a lot of these men's gatherings, men's books, these kinds of things, is to kind of inculcate a crisis moment where they discover their father wounds, they discover their pain, they're kind of hidden, suffering, and now they can finally cry around other men. And this is supposed to be cathartic and spiritual. This is a spiritual activity, at least that's the way it's framed. And so what I wanted to do is get back away from that and go back to the sources and look at the Bible and examine the world and how God made men. Just biologically, God is the creator. He designed us. That means there are natural goods about us that can be celebrated and championed. Of course, those have been corrupted by sin and the fall. But a lot of times when we talk about men, we're missing some key aspects to what it means to be a human in the first place, which of course is the biggest kind of theological inquiry of our day. What is anthropology? It's a study of people. It's a study of men. It's a study of how they're made. And so if we go back to the Bible, if we go back to the sources, we're studying people and we're understanding that we are both body and soul. There is a two-part there where our body, our decaying body. It has great potential. And because of the curse, we will decay and eventually die unless the Lord returns. And yet our soul exists, and we have eternal souls. And then we'll be reunited with these bodies in eternity. These are fundamental realities that are often overlooked. And we just kind of latch on to kind of tropey cosplay masculinity. And I think we should go back to more fundamental matters theologically.
Full transparency, I'm working through your book, Offensive Christianity, right now. I've read it, but I'm working through that right now with my men in my church. And one thing that I really enjoyed was you kind of gave a breakdown of different intellectual movements or streams within the history of the church that you would say add up to a subversion of biblical masculinity. I thought your discussion of pietism was really insightful. Give us just a taste of that, but then maybe summarize that, maybe for people trying to figure out, how did we get to where we are now? How did we get to the point where evangelicalism in general, this is not even necessarily a critique. I mean, it can be that, but I think it's just factual to observe most of what you see in evangelical spaces is feminine coded. Most churches have more women than men. That's been true for a long time. So how did we get here? Sketch that out. And what did all of those different streams and movements that ended up subverting that biblical anthropology, maybe what did they have in common?
Yeah, what they have in common is kind of this tendency in the modern era, and what I'm talking about in the modern era is kind of 17th century and on, with Western thought, to kind of treat the rational, the spiritual, as totally distinct from embodied reality. So the classic example is kind of the atheist mind, who only believes what they can see with their own eyes, what they can study in front of them, and all the other things that can't be logically deduced or proven in the material world are viewed as subjective things. I'm borrowing a lot in the book. I don't mention this, but I'm borrowing a lot from kind of the approach in apologetics and kind of worldview from like someone like Nancy Piercy and Francis Schaeffer, who have really highlighted this. And so I just walked through six streams and that really highlight. You could add more. None of these, you know, I really try to highlight that. Look, feminism is a problem. But feminism was kind of like in the water with a lot of other ideas going on, like pietism, like Nietzsche, like all these other figures that were coming up through the modern era. The basic idea is that in the modern era, not just for Christians, but for all people, there's been a disembodiment or disembowelment where the spiritual, the kind of relationship to God and immaterial concerns, these are treated as subjective and the material is treated more real. What's interesting today, of course, is there's a great resurgence, at least in my context, there has been for a long time, but I would say in the wider public, there's a great interest in kind of the supernatural, whether it be something like aliens or anything like that. There's a great deal of conversation around these matters because it's been suppressed for so long. And so I'm calling for a reintegration biblically and from a Christian standpoint of how God made the world and how God made men particularly to be embodied creatures, not just disembodied souls, which is what a lot of churches end up teaching through, you know, the gospel or anything else when they're studying the Bible. There's almost a disservice we do where, of course, we want people to be saved. We want them to come to a saving knowledge of Jesus Christ. God regenerates hearts. He gives us new life. And yet the body we still have. And many times the implication for a lot of ministries when they don't talk about the body is it's simply a husk to be discarded, and it's really bad. And really, they would almost treat the body itself as corrupt, you know, utterly, where there's no redeemable aspect to it. The best thing to do would be to, like, just starve it, get out of it, be free from this body, when in reality, in eternity, we're going to be embodied creatures again. So it's kind of a disconnect. And we worship, we just did, at least as we're recording this, we worshiped Jesus on Resurrection Sunday, Easter Sunday, as an embodied being. He has a body now. And so all of these matters get very much sidelined and not discussed. And so we've forgotten. And so we just kind of reduce Christianity to either kind of a therapy or a posture or a set of ideas, abstract ideas, instead of an embodied lived experience. So not to use the world's terms on that, but to kind of live out the Christian faith in flesh, that we are Christians in all of life.
It gets into like this other area that you talk about, and which I think has been on our minds a lot. This idea of niceness and nice Christianity. Like, I can remember living in Minneapolis in seminary, and Minnesota has this reputation of called Minnesota nice, right? and I'm driving with my Wisconsin license plate, and someone, I accidentally cut somebody off. They pulled up next to me, rolled down their window and screamed at me. I don't know about where you come from, because they knew I was from Wisconsin, but in Minnesota, we're nice. Just screamed it at me. You know, and I think within Christianity, there's this idea of we're nice, you know? However, sometimes that niceness is only on the surface. And you're contrasting that with the true idea of meekness. And so I think when it comes to missionaries, we go overseas and we don't want to be offensive. We want to fit into the culture. We don't want to step on toes. And so maybe we emphasize the niceness. And how does offensive Christianity, I don't know if it's offensive or offensive, but either way, I guess it's the same, apply to a guy preparing to go overseas? How do we be meek?
It's a great question. It's a great question because that's something I wrestled with as a missionary before I became a pastor. Very much, you know, admiring men like Hudson Taylor and others who went to foreign places to share the good news of Jesus. And of course, in any cultural context, you want to avoid, you know, these landmines that would needlessly alienate, whether it's, you know, when and where you wear shoes or how you eat food or anything like that. But at the same time, I think what's really important for the missionary conversation and why I was excited to come on this podcast is for a lot of American Christians, the missionary kind of ethos, the kind of like standards that they set on the mission field invariably shape the American church. Because for many American Christians, and rightly so, they love missions. They love sharing the gospel. They love sending missionaries overseas to places where the gospel has never been preached. That is kind of in our DNA as American Christians. And so we tend to champion those virtues, those approaches to missions, and they invariably shape how we engage in social issues in America, both politically, culturally, whatever it may be. And so instead of framing it as niceness, what you highlighted from the book is we want to be meek. Meekness does not mean weakness. Meekness simply means power under control and the appropriate use, the prudential use of power for any given situation. This is going to take wisdom. A lot of people are looking for kind of rules when in fact they should be looking for wisdom. Of course, we want to have the wisdom of Christ, the mind of Christ in any given situation. We may make cultural mistakes. We may need to learn some hard lessons with mistakes we make. But with meekness, we want to know that we have agency, we have power, we have influence, we can do things. And then we want to temper it with God's word. We want to obey God's word, and we want to channel it into productive ends. So, of course, the worst version of this, and I don't know, maybe I'm getting into an area we don't want to get into, would be kind of this justification in some contexts where they would call them like insider Muslims, where you have converts to Christianity, or so they say, who are still participating mm-hmm. in many Islamic practices. And I think this is just symptomatic of kind of this niceness where we're tolerating, you know, very divergent religious practices, false religion, and justifying it. Well, they still worship Isa or some version of Isa, and they want to follow Isa. And instead, it's like, no, we should just tell people to stop doing that. Now, is that going to have consequences? Yes. This is a hot debate, I know, in mission circles, because if you're going to enter a place like, gosh, Yemen, Saudi Arabia, and you go over there and you're like, I'm going to be an offensive Christian, you're either going to get kicked out day one, or you could lose your life. You know, like these are really dangerous situations. And so that's why I really want to encourage wisdom. But it has to come from a heart that's been transformed by God, that wants to honor and glorify God. And if we need to rethink how we engage, yes, we should get away from niceness. We should give honor where honor is due. And we should embrace kind of an attitude, a strategy, and tactics which maximize opportunities for gospel proclamation and transformation in a given culture, rather than maximizing, like, how do I stay safe for the longest possible time here? Mm.
I really like the way that you frame that. It's not just the problem of we're being too sensitive. It's making safety the absolute standard. Safety matters in some respect, but it can't be on the throne of our decision-making, especially in missions institutions. We have to think biblically about risk. And that's something that your book calls us to do, which we'll talk more about in just a moment. Here at ABWE, we believe that the Great Commission is given not to nonprofit agencies, not to governments, not just to individuals, but to the local church. The local church is God's plan A for world missions. Let me ask you a question. When was the last time your church had just a missions-themed service, but an intentional time of seeking the Lord, asking, Lord, who is it from among our midst that you would have us to send out? Well, that's why our team here has built a wonderful collection of resources called Send Sunday. You can have not just another Mission Sunday, but an intentional time of seeking the Lord, waiting upon Him, and seeking His direction for who He might send out from your church. There's prayer guides, there's bulletin inserts, there's sermon study guides, and more, all at abwe.org/sendsunday. Join the hundreds of other churches asking the Lord, who would you send out from our midst? Join us for Send Sunday. We're back, and Chase, I want to maybe take us out of the missions conversation for just a second, only to throw us back into it. So thinking again about how we got here, about where the church is at with respect to issues of masculinity and biblical understandings of sexuality and gender roles and feminism and addressing that, what would you say about the typical evangelical church, ways that it's typically targeted, we would say probably, more towards feminine sensibilities? Is that a thing? How did that come across? And how do you correct that without getting into some of what we discussed earlier? What you don't want to do is just have kind of the stereotypical, like, all right, well, you know, on the second Saturday, we're going to have our, you know, brisket smoke off, right? without actually addressing the deeper cultural and maybe even theological reasons that we've lost sight of biblically what it means to be a God-fearing man who's charging forward for the sake of the kingdom.
Yeah, and I would encourage all Christians and all churches to have brisket smoke-offs on the second Saturday.
Yeah, it actually sounds great. Wonderful as I'm saying that. Yeah, I could have thought of a worse example for sure.
It reminds me, I was talking with the pastor about 10 years ago, and we planted this church in Boulder, the Well Church, and we had been reaching, and we still are reaching, millennials and younger people, mainly because a third of our city is made up of college students here in Boulder with the University of Colorado. But he was asking me, how are you attracting the youth? You know, he's an older man with an older congregation. How are you attracting the youth? Do I have to dim the lights in the sanctuary? Do I need to play Hillsong more? And it was funny to me only because I'm not laughing at the man for his curiosity or his desire to reach new demographic. But a lot of people, when they think about these things, they think about, again, the kind of appearance of things. They think if we just change the lights or change the songs or add more drums or whatever it is, that's going to be the secret sauce. And people are looking kind of for pragmatic solutions. And what you mentioned is that, yes, a lot of churches do preach in such a way that it's very coded to the feminine nature. What do I mean by the feminine nature? It's more about feeling safe, feeling heard, nurturing, and inclusivity. These are hallmarks of women. These are wonderful things that God designed them with. And yeah, when the pastor in the pulpit kind of models that kind of Christianity with that kind of, you could also call it kind of like the opposite of the brisket Sunday. That's the way the preaching is. It's kind of posturing towards that. You know, I was just listening to a sermon from a friend. And his sermon on Sunday, on Resurrection Sunday, was very much about, you're safe here. Your doubts, we welcome doubters and skeptics here, you know, that kind of thing. And it was just a very different emphasis than I had, where at the end of the sermon, it was like, you're going to hell if you don't believe in Jesus Christ. And so when we're thinking about kind of looking at the average evangelical church, how it really has the market of catering to suburban, particularly white women. Again, not a problem in and of itself if you're aware of that and the caveats that come with that. It right. leads to kind of an emasculation of the church, where men are an integral part. They should be leaders in the home, leaders in the church. And when we're trying to course correct on that, it's not that we need to put on different trappings or put, you know, the pastor needs to preach in camo or something like that. It's literally getting back to theology. It's getting back to, like, what is my role as a pastor? My role as a pastor is to champion the word of God and to speak clearly. The challenge is going to be, most people have come preloaded with expectations into the church where they expect the pastor not to offend them. They expect the pastor, and if they do offend, it's going to be like, you just don't know how you're worthy enough. You don't know that you're loved, you know, and it's going to be very therapeutic. And instead, what we want to do is simply say, this is how you failed to follow God's law. You can find grace and mercy in Jesus Christ because Jesus kept the law, and that requires these things. Men are looking for application. They're looking for a rigorous Christianity that's applied to all of life. They're looking to be challenged, and not in the tropey kind of challenge way that you may see from these bigger churches where, you know, they're berating men. When we're speaking to men, we're speaking as rulers of homes and owners of businesses and men who are capable of great things in life. And so we want to approach them as such, but we should offer correction and instruction. And instead, many times, instead of offering that, the men are kind of either berated or talked down to in an inappropriate manner, or told they, in order to become truly spiritual, they need to get more in touch with their emotions. They need to become more emotionally intelligent. And this is classic therapeutic language kind of shuffled into the church. And what women are typically not looking for is clear correction from the pulpit. And I will be honest about that. I mean, that can be very difficult even for Christian women. Godly Christian women welcome that, receive that, no problem. But for a lot of churches in America, because they have been kind of instructed in seminaries and parachurch institutions in order to be nice above all else, it's going to be very feminine coded. And the men are going to intentionally or not unintentionally feel alienated because they're not being given clear instruction. Like, here's how you repent of your sins.
I think what you're saying is important because if we're thinking like missionaries, then some degree of contextualization is necessary. You need to think about your message and being faithful to it. Yes. But also about your audience. And for, I think many pastors and missionaries, our goal is to make disciples, which includes men and women. And we have to make sure that we haven't subconsciously adopted a way of being in ministry that is only going to or is going to tend perhaps to catch more of someone who is marked by those feminine sensibilities and miss some of the harder men and aggressive men who need the gospel, right? So part of it's a question of contextualization. But I want to follow up and ask you specifically, you've spent time in the missions world. You're involved in Baptist life, churches cooperating together for the sake of missions and church planting. It's not hard to figure out how we got to a position where so many of the singles, especially that we send into missions, God bless our single female missionaries. Many of them are faithful risk takers, but they are disproportionately represented compared with single men in particular by a rate that's astonishing. I've seen as many as a 9-to-1 ratio between single females and single men. I think it's easy to see that's the downstream effect of a lot of the things that we're talking about in the church. What do we do about it? If you're speaking to missions leaders, missionaries, how do we rescue missions from this vibe that is sort of oriented around compassion only, compassion as an end in itself? You know, poverty tourism is kind of the way that that's been negatively characterized. And again, those things maybe have their place, but they're only reaching one sector of your audience. How do we represent missions as something to men to kind of have that Shackleton appeal that says, come and expect hard things, do hard things, you know, preach the gospel, die and be forgotten, something that should speak to faithful Christian men and women, but particularly speaks to the masculine sensibility that wants to achieve and strive. How do we do that? Because I don't see in general evangelical leaders prepared to address that moment. And I think the future of Protestant missions efforts, frankly, depends on our ability to adapt and not just adapt our messaging, but actually change how we think about the missionary task as well.
We have to get to fundamentals. What are we doing when we're sending someone overseas, particularly overseas, to do missions work, pioneering work of the gospel? We're sending them into a very dangerous situation. We're sending them to the front lines of ministry where there's demonic activity, where there's going to be resistance, where the gospel hasn't been heard. Some people will come to salvation, yes, but many will reject it and many will hate it. They will hate you. They will reject you. They will revile you. They will lie about you. And instead of framing the kind of missions activity as almost like a Christian version of the Peace Corps, where we're going out and we're just loving on people, we need to understand it fundamentally as a very dangerous activity, not just in terms of physical safety, but spiritual. These people are under spiritual attack from the enemy when they go out into lands that are very much dominated by the influences of the enemy. And so we need to understand the dangers and understand the risk they're taking. Without diminishing, of course, their duties and responsibilities. I think that you've highlighted this in your book, Alex, well, that we shouldn't negatively frame it as like, it's better to go overseas than to love your family. I think that also diminishes the masculine impulse to fulfill his duties and obey God rightly. And so we want to understand it fundamentally as a dangerous activity. This is risky. And we're not, this isn't posturing. This isn't a marketing gimmick. This is like, when we get into, what are we doing when we go into, let's say, Pakistan, and we're going to share the gospel with people that have never heard it, that we can barely speak the language of, and we don't understand their customs. That is very intimidating. And it takes a strong man of steel to go over there and do that without flinching. And knowing the risks involved and knowing kind of the sacrifices he's making. And he's saying, look, worldly treasures probably not coming my way if I'm going to Pakistan to be a missionary. That's just the bottom line. But I'm laying up treasures in heaven. And then holding that up as something to aspire to. This is something that is good and noble, without making, of course, the Christian life, the man who isn't called to that vocational enterprise, somehow less than as a Christian. This kind of ideal standard of the missionary being kind of the Navy SEAL of the Christian world. While that may be a fun like mental exercise or marketing gimmick, we don't want to ever diminish the kind of normal everyday Christian who's fulfilling his duties, working a job and raising a family here on the home front.
Hey, listeners, we know you believe in missions. Otherwise, you probably wouldn't be listening to or watching this show. But have you ever wondered what your next step with the Great Commission should be? Well, wherever you are with missions, if you're ready to get serious and find what your next step is, ABWE's 24-hour demo event is for you. Now, you can go to demo.abwe.org. Again, that's demo.abwe.org, and use the promo code podcast for a discount on your registration fee. So it takes all excuses away. What are you waiting for? Come find your next step with the Great Commission at demo.abwe.org, promo code podcast.
You know, I think there's like this desire to be a Boniface and chop down trees, but also not a willingness to take the arrows, which is the way that the Boniface ended his life. You know, and I think we have a lot of men that they respond well to the message of, hey, let's be aggressive and let's do these hard things, but also not being willing to control their temper, control their anger, control their impulses. You know, I Jordan Peterson's all over the place, but you know, his idea of like, yeah, you can't change the world until you learn to make your bed, you know? And I think there's something real true about that, that as men, we have to challenge these younger men to do those basic things.
So Chase, real quick, it's offensivechristianitybook.com.
That is correct. Yeah.
And you have a show as well. We'll leave all of those notes in the show notes if you're a podcast subscriber watching on YouTube. But join us for our bonus segment where we'll talk more about how this guy, Chase, is ministering in Boulder, Colorado, of all places, and what that looks like applying this in a very hostile mission field, culturally speaking. The Missions Show is a ministry of ABWE. Learn more and take your next steps in the Great Commission at abwe.org. And reach out to us. Get more content at missionsshow.com and missionsshow.com/premium to get access to our added segment that we'll record now with Chase for our premium subscribers. Thanks, and until our next episode, go and make disciples of all the nations.